All right. Seriously? Get out of my studio.
I was going to say, can we be serious here?
No, like, this is my show. You can't come in every single episode of my show because I am the host of Interview MVP.
How can you interview yourself?
Well, I'm an MVP. I can interview I can interview myself if I want to. I can have prescriptive questions. Dave, what do you think about this? Well, I think this is a very good idea.
You are your own really best friend, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Dave is his only best friend. And actually, I'm the host of Interview with an MVP. Because again, just like the previous episodes, I'm seated behind the TriCast. And we're here at the Microsoft Channel 9 studios in Washington State. The city is Seattle. The sub kind of area is the Bellevue-Redmond area.
We're actually in Redmond.
Redmond. I was getting there. Building 25.
Building 25.
Brand new Channel 9 studios. The setup we have here might look familiar to you. You know, Passion Switch do a lot of their episodes and recordings and things that they do in here. You know, Matt McSpirit's done a lot of different stuff. So we have the awesome opportunity as part of MVP Summit to come out here and record in the Channel 9 studio.
And what did we record? What are we showing them today?
So today we're going to be talking all about Azure Site Recovery.
That acronym is pronounced Acer.
Is that like the Acer computer brand?
Yes. It's very popular.
Acer? Like Acer. A-C-E-R, Acer?
Well, A-S-R.
No, it's A-S-R, but it's pronounced Acer.
So Azure Site Recovery.
Yes.
Who's that gentleman seated to your right?
This gentleman seated to my right is my esteemed colleague who has driven all the way down from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, to join us here. This is Alan Rafuse.
Hi there.
International Hyper-V expert.
International Hyper-V expert as well as PowerShell. You know, he's one of the rising stars. He's going to give Sean Kearney a run for his money here. Crystal's on her phone.
I have to work.
She's
I gotta work too.
She's like,
I have a little event going on tomorrow.
Are we not working right now?
Pretty sure we're working.
We're trying.
Yeah, I'm working.
Train
so
and
Azure
educate.
Site Recovery, what does that allow you to do? It allows you to take on-premises virtual machines, replicate those out to an Azure data center of your choice. You know, what is that? Why is that important, you know, Alan?
Well, what if there's a hurricane coming?
Or a fire.
Or
you don't generally know fires are coming.
I have another one. What if you forgot to pay your bill at your existing data center? And they're just about to shut you off. If you had Azure Site Recovery, you could just fail right over. Bet you've never heard of that scenario, Clint.
But chances are if you didn't pay your bill at your production site, you didn't pay your bill at your disaster recovery site.
No. Different credit cards. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used Air Miles for my disaster sites. Air Miles credit card.
So you're an SMB?
No, it's a really high limit. You can
$24.
Yeah.
I know how you roll. I've been out with you many times.
Hey, listen. Just because I only have one VM to protect doesn't mean I can't use the same tools as the enterprise. They're protecting thousands of workloads.
Absolutely. And right? Azure Site Recovery is that tool of choice.
It is.
So we're migrating from on-premise or premises, depending on how many data centers you're not paying for,
yes.
into the cloud.
Hurricanes are so old.
Mm-hmm. Right? But the nice thing about ASR is it doesn't matter if it's a Hyper-V environment, Crystal. It can also be a vSphere environment, too.
I think we have some pretty cool demos. We're going to take a look at, I think, Azure Backup as well, right, Clint? I think you did some of the demos for this episode.
I did do some of the demos for this episode.
I think he's pretty proud of that.
Azure Backup is a component. It's like a subcomponent of DPM, which is Data Protection Manager, which is a piece of the System Center suite. In previous episodes, we talked about VMM, Virtual Machine Manager. That, too, is a part of the System Center suite. So Azure Backup can actually protect via an agent that you install inside of the guest operating systems. It can protect not only...
Is he doing the actual session right now?
I don't know. That's
the
very...
things you've learned before are now
eloquent.
Going to be applied here?
Yeah. So this
and relevant?
Yeah. So we're building upon the previous concepts that we've discussed.
So if you haven't checked them out, please do.
Yep. So this one, we're going to focus on Azure Backup as well as Azure Site Recovery. Gentlemen, any last pieces of information that you would like to discuss
all,
with
all joking audience? Aside, because, you know, we like to have fun on Interview with NBF, no doubt.
No doubt.
Our content is top-notch, though. So what you're about to see beyond this funny introduction that we just did is some actual real good, relevant content, and you should actually be able to take this and set this up in your environment to start testing it out.
And migrate to the cloud.
Exactly. Thank you, guys. Guys, welcome to our Hyper-V and System Center operational training. We are doing episode number 9 here today. I know these have been coming fast and furious this week, but you know, it's what we've got to do to get ourselves ready to learn to support Hyper-V and System Center in production. My name is Dave Kawula. I will be your host today. I'm Microsoft MVP. That's Mother Industry Awards as well. Hopefully we'll be joined by Clint Wyckoff, also Microsoft MVP. We're both cloud and data center management. But in his day job, he actually works for Veeam Software. So he can probably provide quite a bit of good insight behind what it is that we're going to be talking about today. So in today's session, what we're going to be looking at is everything backup related, backup, recovery, restore for Hyper-V and Hyper-V environments, and what are, you know, some of the options that we have from a configuration standpoint. Now, this one's pretty exciting for me, guys, because I actually recently had a chance to speak at the Microsoft Ignite conference last week in Atlanta, and we were actually having a session on Azure Site Recovery, and our session was actually zero to hero in 20 minutes on Azure Site Recovery. So believe it or not, we actually showed what the configurations look like. Now, you can't exactly configure VMs to be backing up into Microsoft's cloud in 20 minutes because it takes a little while to replicate the data. So what I've done is I've actually created a time-sliced demo video that will actually walk through, and it takes about 10 minutes or so to go through it. But the coolest part about looking at the demo is it basically takes a pretty clean Microsoft Azure portal. So you guys would basically just sign up for Microsoft Azure portal. And then you'd actually be able to start protecting your workloads, even without having a site-site VPN. So we're going to take a look at some of those concepts. I know that it looks like Clint has just joined us. So Clint, welcome. I was just doing a quick introduction of some of the things we're going to cover. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. I know you're incredibly busy with your work schedule. So thanks for taking the time to share some knowledge with us here today.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so one of the other things that Clint is going to be able to shed a little bit of light on is next week, Clint is actually delivering a session in Las Vegas at the IT Dev Connections Conference. Excellent conference, a lot of amazing speakers, great lineup there. And he's going to be talking a little bit about Microsoft Azure Backup. So I know, Clint, you've been doing some extensive research on this and taking a look at some of the configuration scenarios. So I'm hoping that you can help shed a little bit of light on what that's going to mean for people on the training session today.
Yeah, it'll be good. Definitely a lot we could talk about there. Been working a lot with it over the course of the last few weeks, though.
Perfect. And your extensive knowledge that you have with backup recovery replication is, you know, second to none in the industry. So once again, super pleased that you're able to join us here. Okay, so just a little bit about ourselves. You know, guys, follow us on Twitter. Once again, this is where you're going to find all of the latest and greatest that we're doing out in the field. I posted two or three updates to my GitHub repository for my Hyper-V scripts yesterday. More are coming. This is where you'll find us pretty much hanging out on a daily basis. So post-call, you guys have any questions or anything like that, super easy way to get in touch with Clint and myself. I'm at Dave Kawula. Clint is at Clint Wyckoff. All right. Clint, you're going to like this one. Patent pending, buddy. So if you can Control-C, Control-V, you can back up Hyper-V. So first things first, you've built your environment.
you've taken and you've stood everything up. Yesterday, we learned about building our virtual machine manager infrastructure. We actually built all of that from scratch yesterday. Now we need to protect that because, you know, that's a lot of hard work that we have that goes into building this infrastructure. So now you want to have a way to, you know, back up and protect this. So at a grassroots level, you know, you can actually take and back up Hyper-V without any backup technologies. Now, your backups, I always get these backwards, Clint, between the crash consistent and the application consistent. Maybe, can you just speak to that real quick, the kind of two general modes of backing stuff up?
There is, right. So if you if you think about a Windows server or even your desktop or your laptop, right, if you go over and you hold down the power button and hard power it off, that's the next time it comes up, it will say, hey, you know, Windows didn't shut down appropriately. You know, do you want to start up, blah, 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 that whole scenario. Think of that from a backup perspective. If I take a backup of something that's crash consistent, it would be equivalent to going over and pulling out the plug. So if there's any transactions in flight, say, for instance, if it's SQL Server or if it's Exchange, Oracle, or any highly transactional application that needs to be appropriately quiesced before it's protected, right? Making sure that the application itself is in a consistent state. Transactions are halted or they're being diverted into a different separate location during the backup cycles. That's what the benefits of application consistent backups. And in the Windows environment, you leverage VSS or the volume shadow copy services. Not really sure why they call them VSS, because it should be like VSCS, but it uses VSS to quiesce the applications, inside of the guest OS. And then there's different way that that's done within within the Linux side of the fence as well. So within the Linux world, DBAs and application owners that are writing code for Linux operating systems are well aware of what pre-freeze and post-thaw scripts. So a pre-freeze is something that's executed before a backup to put an application in a consistent state. The backup occurs, and then after the backup is finished, there is a post-thaw script that runs through and essentially puts it back into normal operating mode. So crash consistent is like going over and pulling the plug out of something, transactions, there's the possibility of loss of transactions, things of that nature. But for most general servers, crash consistent is completely fine. Windows is very resilient. We've seen a lot of issues with that within the last few years, since I would say server 2012, 2012 R2. But if you're running any sort of application inside of there, like Active Directory, SharePoint, Exchange, SQL Server, Link, any of those types of apps, you want to make sure that you're using VSS quiescence inside there.
For sure. So let's just pretend that we didn't have any backup tools. So like, let's just start with the core Windows operating system, Clint. I'm one of these guys that likes to just start with what I have before I add anything kind of third party. You guys probably have heard of this little thing called shadow copies before. So Clint, is it possible for me to turn on shadow copies on a volume that we're running virtual machines on?
That's a really good question.
It is.
I'm sure it is, but you probably wouldn't want to do it.
But we're going to do it right now. So what I'm doing here, guys, is I'm going to turn on shadow copies. I'm going to take and create a couple of different shadow copies on this particular volume. Now, this volume that I've got is actually running on Windows Server 2016. By the way, this actually does work, Clint, on everything. So let's say that for argument's sake, you just needed to take a really quick backup of everything. What you're going to want to do if shadow copies is your only option that you have is you'd want to actually turn off all these VMs, because Clint just talked about application consistent versus crash consistent. So in your chat window that you have right now, why don't you tell me if what I'm doing right now is going to be application consistent or crash consistent? It's a good question, right? So I've gone ahead and I've enabled shadow copies on here. And let's say that something horrible happened to, you know, one of my virtual machines that was on here. Like, for example, my Hyper-V Node 8. Something awful happened to this box here right now, Clint. Somebody went through my Hyper-V manager. Somebody went through and deleted this. Uh-oh, that's probably not a good idea, right? I'm feeling a little brave today, by the way, Clint. I don't know if you noticed that. I've taken my healthy dose of coffee here this morning. So let's see how this works for us. So I can right-click on this volume now, go properties. There's a previous versions tab. Oh, look, I have a version of a couple minutes ago. I take and I open this up. I take and I come into my DC build folder. I come into my virtual machines. Under my virtual machines, oh, look at that, Clint. I've actually got something in here, right? And so in theory, what I can do is I can actually take this particular hard drive out of here, and I could go grab my virtual machine configuration, which would be living up right here. So I can grab this folder, and I can grab its corresponding hard drive. I could copy it. Now remember, this was a little tricky, Clint, because this VM was actually off, right? So this VM was not running. So is this going to be in a crash consistent state, or is it going to be fine? So this level of backing up is actually fine because this VM was actually not running. There was nothing in flight. There was no transactions in flight on this particular VM. Then I can come back to my D drive, come back to my VM's folder. I can simply just paste this back in here. Once I paste this back in here, when I delete from Hyper-V, it actually doesn't delete the VHDX file. So I'm going to replace the file in the destination. So I'll pretend that we had gone through and deleted the hard drive as well. So now I'm completely replacing the virtual hard drive, Clint. I'm completely replacing the VM. And so this is my point with that initial slide. Control-C, Control-V, backup Hyper-V. Guys, all of this lives in the Windows subsystem, okay? Worst case scenario, you can copy and paste. You can move files around. You can do this kind of stuff, okay? Clint has actually never seen this demo before because I have a few little tricks that I keep up my sleeve, even although we've worked together for a little while. But this is a great, easy way to show core grassroots functionality because then after this, we want to obviously have some more features. So now
And you don't want to have to power off your virtual machines to back them up.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that this is a good way of doing it. I'm saying that if you're in an emergency and you need to bring this back, this is actually a way that could potentially work for you. So now I browse out to my D drive, DC build, virtual machines, Hyper-V node 8. I have to go up one folder. It finds the subfolders in there. Oh, I only had a back of my domain controller. Okay, see, because you can see here, guys, that even with this, it didn't bring back all the files. So I would have to go grab the control files. But how could I stand that VM back up? I still have the hard drive, Clint. I could build a new virtual machine, right?
Right. Just point to that.
Hyper-V, Hyper-V. Because I just want to show you guys how easy it is to fix some of the stuff. That was just kind of my whole point to this initial demo. If I knew where the location was, I don't want to waste time because we have so much to cover today. I could actually do an import on there if I remembered where the actual folder structure was. I just decided to do this demo hot and live. Now it's 4 gigs of RAM. Next. The only problem I'm going to have here is that my networks aren't going to be configured all the same, so I'd have to add some additional network adapters, but that's okay. Next. Hyper-V Node 8. Choose an existing virtual hard disk. DC builds. VMs. Browse. And I can just go...
So Michael has a question out here. How much additional disk space does it require?
How much additional disk space does it require to use what? To use shadow copies?
Yeah.
So it actually doesn't. So shadow copies kind of does a block copy mechanism. It doesn't double up. But where you can configure how much space this is going to take, I'm just going ahead and starting that VM. Let me go back to my...
This is the shadow copy settings itself. When you enabled the previous versions there?
Yeah, exactly. Come back to my computer here.
In a previous life, we used to use this... previous versions or shadow copies for a file share that we had to give users the ability to go out, right-click on file, and do individual rollbacks at to points in time throughout the day of a file server.
And the coolest part about this is that you can actually use this and you can redirect this to different volumes. Now, you have to do that on initial setup because once it's got data on it, you have to wipe all the data off and lose all your shadow copies. Then you can redirect this to another volume. And I've actually done this on physical servers back in the day, like Clint said. And you know what, guys? If you're not using this on your file servers today, I actually still leave this, I still leave this on some of my file servers, because this is a super, super easy way to just get back files on a file server without needing any technology. You don't even need to go talk to your backup admin. You have local backups on your file server, because most static files on a file server are fine to use this with.
And it's a great way to empower your users so they're not calling the help desk.
Exactly. You can turn this on any Windows device, by the way, guys. Like, this started in, I think, Windows 2000, Clint?
Yeah.
So anyways, that's just a great example of application versus crash consistent. So it looks like I might have one of my SCSI buses messed up. But guys, I'm telling you right now, I could get this VM back up and running, okay? So that leads us to another good point, is that if I have an existing virtual machine that's running on here, and like, for example, yesterday we looked at our management console. This is where I installed our virtual machine manager. Check this feature out, guys. Look what I can do here. I can take this management console at any of these stages here. So these are actually powered off. So these where these snapshots were taken, I could right-click on these snapshots now, and I can actually say export, and I can export this out to DC build, backup of VMM, and check this out. I can actually run a backup off of the snapshots that we've actually created, and I can actually take that, export that, move that out to a lab environment if I wanted to, do some testing, do some things, okay? So all along the lines of just some of the native things that we can do. So Clint, once I have this export, I could actually, in theory, take this over to another Hyper-V host. I can move this to another environment, right?
Yep.
Oh, perfect. Scott just made a really good comment. Scott, longtime caller, not first-time listener, has made a really good comment here. He said that Jason and him are using VSS on all their file servers today, and they have a lot, by the way, guys. They have over 50 file servers that are out there in locations around Canada. I may have that number wrong, but 50 just sounded like a really good number. So, all right.
Yeah, they just upgraded. They have 100 now.
Nice. You guys are really busy. That's the beauty of virtualization. You can make as many as you want. So that's kind of neat. I just wanted to show some really basic functionality just to get ourselves started, guys, because as an operator of a Windows server and Hyper-V, people often think that you need custom APIs or custom backup tools or things to actually get around and move things around the file system. Believe me, these are just regular Windows servers. The hypervisor lays on top with the parent partition. You can do a lot inside of there. Now, that being said, Clint, you can also break things very easily, so you do have to be careful, right?
Very easily, yes.
All right. So now what we're here to talk about today is virtual machine replication and protection. Most of this is going to cover the native tools and tool sets that we have. And those native tool sets and tool sets that we're going to have are going to talk about native backup technologies. We'll talk a little bit about Azure Backup, the backup tools that come with Windows Server. We'll talk about Hyper-V Replica, and we'll talk about Azure Site Recovery, because I know a lot of you are very, very interested in Azure Site Recovery. So that's where we'll pop into that demo. We'll actually show you what that looks like, pushing your backups into somebody else's cloud. And so Clint, when we take a look at, in general, the way that VSS works and kind of quiesces those backups in a Windows server. You were talking about the pre-freeze and the post-thaw scripts that come with Linux. Could you maybe shed some light from somebody that works with backup and replication kind of on a daily basis about, you know, what some of the key components are to backing up a Windows server, specifically a Hyper-V server?
Like the Hyper-V node itself?
Yeah.
Well, not
the physical server, but actually the VM.
Okay. Oh, well, I was going to say, I mean, that's actually the first part of that, backing up Hyper-V hosts. That's something that actually comes up quite frequently. At least we're asked about it, you know, like, why do I need to protect? How should I protect? When should I protect my Hyper-V hosts? And I would argue that it's all appliance-based. You know, essentially, it's the cattle versus cat type mentality. You know, as soon as one breaks, just spin up another one, bring it into the environment, live migrate things over to it. You really don't need to protect the node itself. But the guest virtual machine, so you can see, like, if I have, say, for instance, a virtual machine and I want to protect it, has multiple hard disks associated, right? The first backup is going to always be a full backup, okay? There's a couple of different ways, modern ways, of protecting virtual machines nowadays, right? There's what is called an agent-based solution, which is kind of the legacy way of backing things up by installing a physical piece of software inside of an operating system to back it up. Even though it's a virtual machine, it's still treated if it was something that you don't have access to any hypervisor for, right? For workloads in Azure and cloud-based workloads, that absolutely makes sense because you don't have access to the hypervisor. But for more on-premises workloads, right, being able to take a snapshot or a checkpoint, right, of the entire virtual machine and everything inside of it and back it up without any software, right, is very powerful. So not only does that allow you to back up the entire, virtual hard disk, the configuration files, all that stuff, but even grabs individual items inside of that as well. If you can see here in Dave's example on the top left-hand corner, so you have on Monday, or on Sunday, excuse me, you've got a full backup occur here on the left-hand side, and in the center each day after that, you would only back up, you know, what blocks of data have changed since that previous day. That's known as change block tracking. So in a Hyper-V world, or even take a step back for a second, in a VMware world, CBT is something that's been there natively, right? And whenever you take a snapshot of a virtual machine, it resets the change block tracking so that the next time a backup vendor comes along to take a snapshot of a virtual machine, it can see which blocks of data have changed since the previous backup, right? That allows for what is called incremental, okay? So you have full backup, and then you have subsequent incremental backups that would occur after that, right? And that allows, you know, much smaller disk space requirements from a backup storage perspective. So then you will, each day during that week, you would have, say, for instance, incremental backups occur until your retention policy kicks off and says, hey, I want another full backup, right? So it would go out, and it would take a snapshot or a checkpoint of your virtual machines, create a full backup. And then each one after that would be incrementals until you meet your retention policy of, say, for instance, 30 days, okay? Now, there's different types of retention policies. There's forward incremental. There's also reverse incremental backup, reverse incremental or forever incremental, right? So the latest backup on disk is going to always be, say, for instance, a full backup. Or if you're going more with the legacy way of doing things, that's kind of what is known as forward incremental. So, you know, it's a chain, and basically you'd have your full backup occur, incrementals all the way through the week, and then you'd have another full backup occur, incrementals all the way through the week, and nothing would ever be decommissioned until I have another 30 days worth of backups on disk in that example that I just gave. So if I have a retention policy of 30 days, with forward incremental, it's going to actually have the disk space requirements of 2x the capacity, because I will need to have 30 days, and then it won't go and reclaim any of those previous backups on disk until I have another 30 days. So there's a couple of different ways that things are done in a backup environment. So just kind of understanding that, you know, yes, there's full backups, yes, there's incremental backups. Definitely don't want to have to put any type of agent inside of the virtual machines, at least in your data center. And then also being able to appropriately size the environment as well from a backup capacity perspective.
Well, and that leads to a really good point. I want to kind of drill into this this concept a little bit more with VSS and basically volume-based VSS, Clint, and, you know, the ability to do some hardware-based VSS as well, right? Because there is such thing as hardware-based VSS as well, right? And so sometimes your backup, your storage appliance vendors will actually support this. So if you have a SAN, so we've got a SAN. I'm not going to pick out any specific vendors here, but we've got a SAN here, and it does support hardware-based VSS. this would be nicely connected up to our Hyper-V hosts, right? So we would have a series of Hyper-V hosts that are connected into this SAN for backend storage. When we have hardware VSS, guys, instead of you having to have these Hyper-V hosts do all of the work of taking all of those snapshots, all of that work can actually happen back end on the SAN. Okay, so it knows what volumes are on here. So when it goes to take and, for example, have an application consistent backup, it can actually handle all of those functions directly on the SAN. SAN transferring files to itself is the fastest medium that you can have when it comes to backup recovery or general operations. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Clint. Like if we keep all that traffic localized right on the SAN and not have to take and worry about brushing back up against our hypervisor, that really speeds up the backup. So for people
it does, I was going to say because a SAN is much, much, much more efficient at taking a snapshot than any hypervisor itself, right? So you have the time, and you also have the impact to your production environment. So the less time that snapshot is left open, the less impact there is to the production workload running inside of that virtual machine that you're protecting.
For sure. And then we also have, so let's say that this is not an option for you, right? So this is not going to be an option for you, Clint. Let's say you don't have a storage vendor that supports this. And that's fine, guys, because every one of you that's listening is going to have some type of a different configuration. And we understand that. So the traditional approach for taking and doing this, I don't know if this is the right term or not, Clint. Is it an image-based VSS or volume-based VSS snapshots?
I don't understand.
So when we use VSS... On the actual Hyper-V host. So we have a Hyper-V host here, right? And this Hyper-V host has a volume that's attached, SAN or whatever it is. And we want to take a backup of all of those running VMs that are inside of this particular volume. We don't necessarily need to actually go load an agent inside of each of these VMs. We can actually use VSS. We can target this entire volume itself, and we can capture all of the VMs that are running in a similar fashion to what Shadow Copies did, right? So Shadow Copies is really a non-eloquent way of doing exactly this. It didn't go and ask me what VMs I had. It just took everything that was on there. So I can't remember what the actual term is for that for VSS at that level, but I think it's just VSS probably because...
Right. I don't think there's a specific term for it.
Yeah. And so this right here is how most of your backup vendors that you use today are going to function, most of the common ones. So for example, if you guys are a shop that's native System Center and you guys are using DPM, this is how DPM is going to go reach in and grab information off of a Hyper-V server. It's going to use native VSS providers and it's going to come in this way, right? I know that that Veeam does this in a similar way, right? It uses those same providers that are provided by Microsoft to come in and take the snapshots here. It can also support going over and doing this. I believe DPM can also support hardware-based snapshots if available as well. But this is what I think most of the people on the call are going
to do. DPM itself, you still have to load an agent inside of all of the VMs to protect them.
You can. Like I said, DPM is not something I have a ton of experience with. So, but that's why I'm glad we have you on the call. And so when we take and we do, so Larry's got a point here. So he says that Symantec Net Backups do snapshots. I think, did you check? We'll have to check on that, Larry, because I think that you guys were going to look into that to see if snapshots were provided on the Hyper-V environment. So I hope they do. I hope they are provided because we don't want to have to go load agents inside. So when you look at your backup technologies, guys, if you have to load and manually run agents inside of each of the individual VMs that you're running inside, is it safe to say, Clint, that that's kind of an old school way of doing things now?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, at least for on-prem workloads, things that are running in a cloud environment, whether that be a private cloud, somebody else's cloud infrastructure or a public cloud environment, agents sometimes make better sense there.
Or physical,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay, so now there's some stuff that's new that's coming up here for people, right? So if you don't have a Microsoft Azure subscription yet, I would highly suggest that, you know, you go get one, because you can actually get these Azure subscriptions for free, right, Clint? So you actually don't have to pay any money to sign up for your Azure subscription, just to check things out and to have a portal. They're only going to charge you once you actually start using this. And if you guys have an MSDN subscription, I don't know if you guys knew this, MSDN subscriptions get Azure bucks. So if you have MSDN subscriptions in your organization, I think it's in the neighborhood of 150 to like 200 bucks a month in consumption credits that you get as part of that subscription with your MSDN. Or there's also Visual Studio extensions for your developers as well. So you don't have to go break the bank to check this stuff out. You just go sign up, Microsoft.com/Azure, sign up for a free account, add your live or whatever account you're going to use in there for your kind of organizational admin. And then you can start playing around with some of these things. If you have one already, you don't know what your login is, because maybe your software vendor has taken that sells you everything, like your CDWs or your Softchoice of the world. They set this up. I often find this, Clint. They set up and manage this account for the customers. They own that admin account. You need to get that back from them, okay, guys, so that you guys can actually take and manage what's going on there. And so that's it. That's all you need to get started. You're going to have an Azure portal. I have a really cool demo coming up with Azure Site Recovery, so you guys will kind of get to see what that portal looks like, what that experience looks like. But Clint, why don't you tell us a little bit about Azure backup and integration with, you know, your on-prem environments and kind of what this means for people?
Yeah, actually, I think the best way to let me minimize some stuff here. Can you make me a presenter? I can show it to them.
I can do that. Yeah.
Because this is what I've been working on. Let's see here. Sorry.
Let me go to here. I will right-click and I will make you presenter. Clint?
Okay, hold on a second. I'm just getting my screens.
Clint has the control.
Set up here. Show my screens. Scary. Okay, can you see my screen?
I can see your screen, yes. It looks very nice. Very nice and shiny.
In my environment here, I've got, so this is my laptop that I have. Now on my laptop I have the Hyper-V role enabled, and I've got some virtual machines that I've got running on here, right? So this is representative of my on-prem infrastructure, okay? Then out here I have my Azure subscription. If we go out here, we can see that I do have some virtual machines running out here as well. They're powered off so that they're not consuming any dollars, but I do have virtual machines running out in Azure. So one of the things that you're going to want to do here from an Azure backup perspective, so kind of the thought behind Azure backup is that it allows you to protect on-prem workloads, but it also allows you to protect cloud-based workloads out to Azure. All right. So here we can see that I've got some virtual machines that I'm protecting. Right. It's very easy to come in here and see that, you know, I'm protecting Azure Proxy 2 as well as Azure Proxy. And with that, there is an assigned policy, all right? So a policy is essentially where you apply, you know, what type of retention that you want to be associated with this virtual machine, right? So if we come in here, you can see on the backup policy, right? So the backup frequency is it's going to back up daily at 8:30 p.m., and I'm going to keep a backup for 30 days. That's just the default policy whenever you create something that is called an Azure Recovery Vault, right? So a Recovery Vault essentially gives you the ability to have a place to store your Azure-based backups, right? It's based on a resource group, right? So a resource group is a is an Azure term there that allows you to allow resources to share a common space, right? So virtual machines, storage, backup accounts, recovery services vaults, they all belong to this resource group, right? And then you can choose your location. The nice thing about Azure Backup is by default is it's geo-redundant. So by default, you actually have to go in and turn this off. It will replicate your data to two other data centers around the world. So it doesn't matter if, you know, you guys are in Calgary and you chose, for instance, if there was, I don't think there is, if there was a Canada West, for instance, Azure data center, you would want to target that one for your backups, because it would be as fast as possible if I wanted to move things from on-prem out to Azure, right? And then Azure itself behind the scenes would automatically take care of the geolocation of that data to alternate data centers around the world. So if there was a catastrophic failure to that Canada West data center that doesn't exist, just hypothetically speaking here, you're protected, right? So here we can see, like I said, I'm protecting virtual machines, and I'm also protecting folders as well, right? So I've got some, let's see here, click on this guy, whatever there, here, right? We can see that I'm protecting the C drive of a domain controller, right? And it just so happens that this domain controller is running on-prem in my own data center. It is right here on my Hyper-V node that I've got. So how did all this get set up? It's a really fantastic question you just asked there, Dave. So it's really, actually, move over here, close these blades down, come in here. All right, it's actually pretty easy to get set up. So you'll notice here that there's two options. There's backup, and there's also replicate. So the backup uses Azure Backup. The replicate piece that Dave's going to talk about here just in a few minutes is Azure Site Recovery, which gives you the ability to replicate directly out to Azure. And you can see here that I'm not taking advantage of the replication piece, only the backup side. So by first here, it's really easy. We want to add a backup, right? Just a couple of questions that you have to answer here. So the first one being, where is your workload running? Is it in Azure or is it running on-premises? Okay. First, we're going to start off with the basic part here is the fact that it's running in Azure. And then what do I want to back up? I want to back up a virtual machine. Then I can come over here. I can select my policy. I can create a new policy, or I could use just the default policy. The nice part about policy-driven backups is it essentially would allow you to aggregate a lot of virtual machines under a single backup retention. Okay, so if I say, for instance, had Mission Critical or SQL Server, right, I could lump all of those servers into that same bucket to make sure that they're protected. And then you can come down here and say, what items do I want to protect? Well, here's where I can see all the other virtual machines that I have yet to protect in my environment, right? So once we get that set up, then that backup would occur every day at 8:30, and it would keep 30 days worth of retention. Now, if we wanted to back up something on premises, there's a couple of more options here that you can take care of. So I can do files and folders, I can do virtual machines, I can do SQL, SharePoint, Exchange, just the system state, and bare metal recovery. But you can see here that whenever I click on each one of these little boxes and hit OK, it's going to tell me what do I need to do next. So the first thing here for, if I wanted to back up on-premises Hyper-V virtual machines out to Azure Backup, something that's required is an Azure Backup server, as well as the Vault credentials. And the Vault credentials are something that expire within 48 hours after downloading them. So here,
so just before you go on just any further there, Clint, what is an Azure Backup server?
That's actually what I was just going to.
Perfect.
I believe it's this guy here.
I believe some of you may or may not already know what this is. So before you actually tell them, let's see if people in chat can actually figure this out. What do you guys think an Azure Backup server is? Azure Backup server is, Clint, for the win.
Essentially DPM.
It's a new name for DPM, guys.
That's what they've really done is it is DPM, and they've just basically put another name on it. So I have a lot of alerts, red stuff in here. I completely understand that. I've been messing around with a lot of different stuff. This isn't something that you would hope to see in a production environment. So we can see here that I have protected one individual virtual machine, but I'm also doing file level backup of this guy here. So the first thing that you do here is you install the agent, right? So this Azure backup server itself requires SQL 2014 or greater, and it allows you to go out and install agents inside of your on-prem virtual machines. Whenever you do that, kind of go through, you'll get discovered in here, and then you can create a protection policy. Here I have two different protection groups that I've created, an entire protection group, as well as just a SQL, right? So you can see my SQL stuff is going swimmingly well, perfect, all greens across the board. However, my entire protection group, not really quite sure why it keeps saying this replica is inconsistent. I have to figure that out.
Because you're trying to push it out via dial-up?
Actually, I have a really good internet connection.
Wait, I'm on dial-up, sorry. I always forget that.
Yeah, so this allows you to back up in my data center as well as send it out to Azure. So if we edit the settings of this guy, yeah, we can see here that the online backup is an option. Let me see if I can edit. Where's the options?
Basically, guys, you have to understand that Clint is live. He's real-time actually building these demos for what he's doing next week.
In that modify protection group, yeah.
So we're getting a sneak peek at his big presentation that he's going to have. He's probably going to have thousands of people in his room.
Thousands? I don't know about thousands. Do not browse DC01 because access is denied, huh? Okay, but anyhow, whenever you're coming through here to modify the protection group, you can drill down on a machine and you can choose specifically what you want to back up, right? Do I want to back up system state or if it is a SQL server, right? Keep in mind that there's an agent inside of here, so it's aware enough to know that what database instances are running on this SQL server. So then you can go through, protect it on premises, and then what it'll do is it'll automatically ship it out to Azure, right? And with that, you can either do recovery here on-prem. I can come through here, I can drill through, and I can see specifically what do I want to recover. DPM protected data, let me see here, Azure backup. Protected SQL instances, right? So if I wanted to come in here and recover, you know, something from my SQL database back on yesterday, it lists here what recovery options are available on disk as well as online, right? So there's two different recovery points that I've got available for me. And then we can come through here and just kind of go through and do the recovery. I don't want to actually do it because I don't want to mess up my server for next week. You can also do recovery from Azure as well. So here we can, let me see.
And just a quick note on the setup of this. Clint was mentioning that you can have geo-redundant data sets by default, and he was mentioning that you want to configure that for where you're storing things for storage blobs inside of Azure. The pricing difference between geo-redundant and local redundant, guys, is significant. It is significantly different. So you want to make sure you check your pricing model on that. Now, what you have to understand is that your Azure is built in what are called fault domains. A fault domain is a certain number of racks inside of the data center, okay? So if something happened in that one site or that one location, there would be a potential that you could lose all your data. But if you want to have them replicate all of that for you, then you have to make sure that you take and you tweak and configure that. So when you're working in this portal and you don't want a giant credit card bill, you got to make sure that this is one of the big ones that you watch out for. The second note of this is do not go buy Azure on a credit card. If you have a Microsoft rep or Microsoft agreement, get this tied in if you're going to use this to your agreement, because the credit card purchases are the worst pricing level that Microsoft has. It's like going into the big box retailer and, you know, on one shelf they have everything on sale, on another shelf they have everything full price. When you go walk into Azure with your credit card, you're paying full price for everything. There's no discounts for anything. So in order to get that, you have to talk to your reps at Microsoft, and they've got different discount levels for government, education, healthcare, all of that stuff. Okay, so just make sure that you're actually having a chit-chat with your rep before you go start spending money on this.
And you can see down here, just based on, so I'm geo-redundant, right? I could make it locally redundant, and over here you can actually monitor and see. So this LRS is locally redundant storage, and then the cloud GRS is globally redundant storage. So right now I'm using around 30 gigabytes worth of cloud-based geo-redundant storage.
Awesome, Clint. Good demo. Good demo. All right.
Getting there. And then there's also the ability to do, you know, recoveries as well, right? So if I wanted to come in here, I can do recovery whenever I go into the virtual machines themselves, click on it, right? Then I can choose restore virtual machine.
Now, I got a question. I've got a question for you, Clint. So one of the use cases that I've looked at this for is that, let's say that we're using a backup. Let's say we're using, some of the customers on the call here and some of the viewers on the call here, they're using NetBackup, for example. NetBackup's going to go to a disk-based target, right? So if NetBackup's going to a disk-based target, that repository that NetBackup has, could we not target Azure Backup against that to slide that up to the cloud for long-term kind of repository as a poor man's way of getting your data off-site? Because one of the big things, guys, that I really want you to pay attention to when you're building your backup solutions, having one spot to dump your backups forever is a very bad idea, because in the same way that you're protecting all of your production workloads, you have to treat your first hop of those backups as production data as well. Because if you have some type of compliance regulations, if you have something you need to get back and that backup target is failing, you drop drives, you dropped a RAID array, and now you lost all your backups, what's the point? You might as well just not be backing up anything. So you need to get that off-site. You need to get those backups of the backups off-site.
Absolutely. 3-2-1 rule. 3 copies of your data, 2 different types of media, 1 off-site.
If you do that, you'll save yourself a lot of pain. Because trust me, you don't want to run into a situation where you have those problems. So Clint, that was an awesome demo. I think people are really going to enjoy that. Really going to enjoy that session that you're putting on there. So let me jump back. I'm going to steal presenter back here. Make me the presenter. And I will share my screen again. All right, can you guys see my screen again there? I think so. Are we good there, Clint?
It looks good, sorry.
Okay, no problem. So the next one with protecting your data is actually 100% free, guys. It's a feature inside of Hyper-V, and it's called Hyper-V Replica. So Hyper-V Replica can actually be configured as a replication technique to get your Hyper-V data from host to host or site to site. And the really cool thing about Hyper-V Replica is you can actually almost do that 3-2-1 rule with Hyper-V Replica. You can actually replicate to a DR site. From that DR site, you can chain that replica off to a third site from there if you really want to. It's configurable in a variety of ways. You can have it replicating on frequency as low as 30 seconds, 5 minutes, 15 minutes. You can take and you can have it secured. It is super, super easy to set up Hyper-V Replica as just a great way of taking and protecting, you know, your infrastructure and your investments. I have a lot of my customers, Clint, that actually use this as their primary DR. They didn't have the money to go buy another third-party replication technology, and they're just using this to move their data across in their data center. The other thing is that if you just want a quick way of backing up to another host to protect against host failure for something that's happening for like a small to medium-sized business, these two Hyper-V host servers that you have that you're wanting to run Hyper-V Replica, they could actually be in the same site if you really wanted to. So let's say you had 10 VMs that you were protecting with Hyper-V Replica. You could go ahead and you could ship those over to another host, and then you've got your 10 over here. In the event that this goes down, you have a quick and easy way to light stuff up without having huge impacts to the business. A lot of large enterprises are actually use this as well. So, all right. I think I've actually got some that I can demo. I think I turned on for one of my demos. Let me see if I've got anything enabled here. Let me go see if I've got, I've got a couple that I've replicated over here. So let's see if I've got one that's actually functional. I think I might have disabled the replication. So here, so I've got Hyper-V Replica enabled. This is the target server, guys. So this is one of the target servers that I've got that came off of one of my Hyper-V hosts. So this is in my local data center that I've got. So if I view replication health here, I can actually see a nice little report to say whether this is healthy or not. And not very healthy. The last replication didn't succeed. And the reason is I actually disabled this on the source server. So, and that's okay, but I can see that, you know, in the event that something did happen, if that was all green, I could simply right-click on here, replication, I can test the failover, I can pause, I can double extend. This is where you can take that extra hop clint. And quite literally, to set this up, it's super easy. On the actual target Hyper-V server, you just have to come into Hyper-V settings here, guys. Under Hyper-V settings, there's going to be an option for replication configuration. Under replication configuration, we can enable this here. So we can enable Hyper-V Replica. We can use HTTP or HTTPS. I can choose my target path that I want this to go into. All right. So that's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is if you're in a cluster. So if you go to do this, let me go grab one of these cluster nodes that I've got here. So this is one of our cluster nodes that we've been playing with over most of the sessions here. In this cluster node, if I take and I try to do this in a cluster node, it's actually going to error out on me if I go to try to enable this inside a Hyper-V manager. So let's say I wanted to start replicating something to SD node 1, but it's actually part of the cluster. I go to replication, and I'm not going to actually be able to enable that. So it's not going to let me turn that on. So if I go here inside of the cluster actually has a role or an object that needs to be configured. So I can configure role, and it's called a Hyper-V Replica Broker because it needs to determine where all of this data is going to go. And this is on the target side. This is not on the source side. So this is on the target side. So I can say Hyper-V Replica Broker. You have to give this a name. So this would be my S2D Hyper-V broker. Has to be a NetBIOS name. So this will actually create a cluster name. Takes a second because it has to actually build this in Active Directory here. It's just going to be set by DHCP. Next, finish. And now I have a broker. So until this broker comes online, I'm not going to actually be able to target anything. So once you're in here, then you can actually configure your replication settings inside of the cluster. And this will be for most of you larger customers going to be looking at their configurations. This would be your configuration. You're going to enable the replica, choose HTTP or SSL, and then all that you have to do is choose a target path for this. So all that I would do is come in here under my replica server. I would choose something that's in cluster storage because it is in a cluster, or it can be on SMB storage. So if you just want to target this out to a file share somewhere, you can do that too. So I take and I create a new folder here. I call this replicas and go ahead and accept that. Have to go modify some firewall rules. But after that's done, then I can actually enable that replication. That's it. So now I can take any of my Hyper-V infrastructure that I've got that's running inside of here. I could take any of these nodes here, like my existing Hyper-V nodes right here. I could go into here, and I could now target any of the workloads that are running on this particular server. they can actually target anything that's inside of this cluster as a replica target. So I can actually send replicas of all my Hyper-V infrastructure over to here. So when I'm inside of this particular server, I can go in, configure its settings, and I can take and I can actually ship that data over there. Now, because these are joined to the domain, this should work. Now, remember, guys, I am doing this nice and hot and live. So hopefully I actually have a VM in here. If not, I will take and I'll quickly build one for you. And I understand we're going to probably end up going overtime today by about 15 minutes. I do apologize, guys. I do have a demo that I want to show you guys on Azure Site Recovery. I just want to keep this all together in kind of one nice contiguous session here. So I'm just going to go ahead and create that virtual machine. Next, finish. So now I have this virtual machine, and I want to actually replicate this over to another target machine. So now all that I would have to do is go target that replica server. Now, I forgot what the name that I called that server is, so what I have to do is come back here, come back over to my cluster, and I just have to make note of what I call that. I call it S2DHV Broker. S2DHV Broker. It's very important when you set this up, guys, that you actually are able to ping this. If you can't ping this, it's not going to work. So ping S2DHV Broker. See how we have a little bit of a problem there? Because I didn't enable the firewall rules. So I have to come back over to here. Connect to this guy. And so now I'm on here. And I'll show you where the firewall rules are for Hyper-V. Oops, sorry. Firewall. Like I said, I don't know why my context typing, my search menu isn't working. So if I scroll down to Hyper-V here, there's predefined rules here. See these predefined rules that you have here, guys? You just have to simply check these off. Now, I want to actually be able to ping this box. So this is all you do in prod. So what I'm going to do, as this is a non-prod box, my firewall was off. It didn't actually resolve that. I might have to go create a host record or something. My DNS might not have registered all of that stuff just yet. And that's fine. But anyways, that's all it is, guys. You just have to take and come through this particular node, and I would simply just target whatever that server is once I have DNS working. Choose the VM and replication frequency. Choose how many recovery points, and you're good to go. I can't pass this point because I actually have to set up the replica server. But that's it. You turn it on, set the frequency, check the replication health and status, and you're good to go. It quite literally is that easy to actually set this up. You can do failovers and failbacks with this. You can do re-IPing on the destination, on the target side, in case you're going to a data center that has that. So that is all very cool stuff. And we could actually probably, Clint, we could probably dig in with like a 1 or 2 hour session just on Hyper-V replica itself. There's so much that we could potentially cover inside of there. All right. So moving that data over to the other side. Do you extended
rep? I actually have to, I have a hard stop here at the top of the hour. So
yep.
David, I have to drop off for now.
No problem. I think I actually may have a hard stop here too. We might have to continue this because I think I may actually have my double booked myself for another meeting. Let me check for 1 sec here, guys. Clint, thank you so much for joining us. As always, a pleasure having you on. Your insights are always absolutely amazing. So thank you so much.
Sweet. Talk to you guys later.
Look like I'm actually not double booked, so I can actually keep going here. Okay, so guys, if you're good to stay on, if not, you can watch the video at the 1 hour mark. I'm going to probably go for about another 15 minutes or so because I do have something that I want to show you next here. And so the next thing that I want to show you is I want to show you what happens with Azure Site Recovery. So Azure Site Recovery right now in its current iteration is fully supporting System Center 2012 R2. This is going to be extended very soon for 2016. I haven't seen the release that all of this is fully supported because Windows Server 2016 just went GA a couple days ago. But Azure Site Recovery protects against multiple scenarios. The easiest scenario that we have with Azure Site Recovery is we have the ability to take this, all the content or whatever you want in this data center, and we can actually ship it up to Azure. The only thing that you need to actually get your data there is you need to have 443 with a selected number of ports open. On the configuration guide, they'll list out all the different sites at Azure that you need open. So if you're filtering, you have proxies and stuff like that. That's the first one, okay? So that's the easiest way to just get your VMs up there. Now wait, there's more. This is like a one of those ShamWow commercials for you. What if you're running this environment on VMware? So can Azure Site Recovery protect your running VMware environments that you have today? And the answer is yes, absolutely. This exact same scenario can actually work for us to ship our VMs up to Azure, and we can have failover plans. So this is running VMware. This is running Hyper-V. If you did have something catastrophic happen, you lost a VM over here, you can actually light it up inside of Azure. So that's pretty cool. Now wait, it does more. What if we didn't want to go to Azure? What if we had our own dedicated DR site and we wanted to have Azure Site Recovery Recovery Manager actually looking after the replication data center to data center? So does this work? Yes. Does this work like this if you've got VMware on both sides? The answer is yes. And the reason that this all works, guys, is that Microsoft bought a company with Azure Site Recovery. They made an acquisition a few years ago, and the company was called InMaj. And so InMaj was doing this for years, and they actually had a product called InMaj Scout. And InMaj Scout is actually what allows us to do this. Now, the guys at InMaj Scout have moved over to Microsoft. They're working there now. All of this stuff is pretty cool and nice and great. Now what they've done with their InMaj Scout is they've actually built some logic for the new VMware to Hyper-V conversion. It's called the V2H, VMware to Hyper-V, using the InMaj Scout and some PowerShell scripts is going to be the new kind of de facto standard of migrating from VMware over to a Hyper-V environment on your local Hyper-V hosts, Azure, anywhere you want. The other cool part about this technology is, let's say that you had another cloud out here. Let's say that you had AWS, so you had Amazon over here, or you had something like Google or somebody else's cloud that you were running virtual machines in. Now what we can do is we can actually set DR and replication with Azure Site Recovery cross-cloud. So basically this provides a mechanism to allow you to backup, restore, or replicate anywhere, anytime. This slide's a little old because it's only talking about Azure Site Recovery or Azure Recovery Manager, but these are the feature sets that you get with Azure Site Recovery as well. Now, if you want to do fail backs, so you want to actually fail back to your data center, for obvious reasons, you're obviously going to have to set yourself up some type of a VPN connection, and you can actually set up site-to-site VPNs between Azure and your data centers very, very easily. So if you want to have the ability to fail back and forth, you're going to need to set up a VPN. To just get your data there, though, you just need northbound traffic that's going to take 443 up to the cloud. It's going to get it there, but you're just not going to be able to get it back very easily without taking and having a VPN. Because when I turn some of these VMs on in a partial failover scenario, I want them to be able to communicate with the rest of my infrastructure back down here. The good news is, it's actually a pretty straightforward setup. First thing that you're going to need is you're going to need an Azure account. Second thing you're going to need to do is define a network in Azure. Third thing you need to do is just define some storage as to where we're going to put this. So Clint showed kind of a cool demo as to what that looked like. And so I would like to show one for you guys as well. So hopefully this shows up okay. I'm going to bring up a video here. And I'm just going to play this because the reason I have to do this in a video format, guys, is because when you go to register some Hyper-V providers and sync in, basically what happens is it can take 10 or 15 minutes to actually sync stuff up. So I've got about 10 minutes left. We'll go through a quick demo and then we'll wrap up our session from here. All right, so let's go ahead and play this. Perfect, and that should be full screen. So I'm just gonna make sure you guys can see everything okay. So first thing you do is go into your Azure portal. You're gonna search for the word backup. You're gonna find something called the Backup and Site Recovery OMS suite. So you're going to click on this. and you're going to create yourself what's called a recovery services vault. So that recovery services vault was kind of that main portal screen that that you were looking at, and so that's what you're going to take and you're going to be configuring as you're going to go through this process. So we're just going to give it a name. We're going to choose a subscription. I want you to notice that I'm using one of these free subscriptions. So I've got a bunch. I've got a pay-as-you-go, and then I've got two or three free subscriptions that I've got a couple hundred bucks a month in there. I'm going to go ahead and create a new resource group for this. Remember, this was a bundling of resources that go together in Microsoft Azure's portal. I can choose the location. So I'm going to choose West US for this. And I want to pin this to my dashboard so when I come into my main screen, I can see this. And it just takes a couple seconds. So you can see here that I've got my my recovery vault being created. Now, this just takes a couple seconds for it to be created. This is the native view that you're going to see for the recovery services vault. So remember, Clint was working on the backup. If you look at the plus button at the top there, he was working with the backup functionality. And I'm going to be working with the site recovery. So under getting started, under settings, I can take and I can go through the three-step process here. Step one is you have to prepare your infrastructure. Wow, it looks exactly like what Clint was doing, but instead of Azure or on-prem, it's site-to-site or what you're looking for. So I'm going to do a single Hyper-V host server. I'm not going to have this integrated with VMM, and I'm going to go ahead and go through the configuration here. So now the next thing that we have to do is we have to select our Hyper-V site, but we don't have one yet, so I have to create one. So I'll hit the plus button here, and I'll create my first Hyper-V site. So depending on where you are, this could be your Calgary location, this could be somewhere in Arizona, this could be somewhere anywhere. So this is just something inside of the UI that we can actually take and go ahead and connect into. We will go take and now what we'll have to do is we'll have to download the actual Azure Site Recovery components to, it's called the Azure Site Recovery Provider. So you just go ahead and you download this. And once you download this, you're just going to simply install this on your host that you're looking to protect. So it's a little small little download. I've copied that over to my environment. Now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to run the provider. So this is on my Hyper-V host server that I'm now looking to protect. Okay. And so you can run, you can take that same installer and you can run that over and over again inside of your farm. So let's say you're protecting three or four Hyper-V host servers and you're not using Virtual Machine Manager, you can do this. If you are using Virtual Machine Manager, there's hooks to actually have this in through Virtual Machine Manager as well. So Virtual Machine Manager can see this in the UI and interface. So this just takes a couple seconds for that MSI to install. After it installs, the credentials are passed in the form of a certificate. So what we need to do now is I'll have to go back to the portal and download the certificate and install the certificate on here to finish the process. And that's got all the credentials that are required to get into my tenant account inside of the Azure portal. And so this whole process to, you know, complete this part of the registration realistically only takes a few minutes. Like it took, I think, 13 minutes or so when I did this, because I did this last last week at Microsoft Ignite. So this is where I would have downloaded the key file. So the key file here has been downloaded to my local box, and I just go grab it. It was in that same spot in the Azure portal. You just go download it from there, and I just go grab, and this has all my credentials that I need in order to connect up. And I go ahead and link this in. And I'll say, yep, okay, so it knows that's my recovery vault. And I say connect to Azure Site Recovery without a proxy server. Like I said, if you are going through a proxy, you need to make sure that you whitelist these sites going up. Now, in my configuration, I do have a site-to-site VPN, but that does not matter. You only need 443 outbound SSL by default. If you check Azure Site Recovery's main configuration page, online, they list all of the different sites you need. I think there's probably about 8 or 9 different sites at inside of Microsoft Azure that you would have to take and sync up with. So this just takes a second to actually register the server, and this is where I started to time slice the demo, because now when I hit finish and I go back to my recovery vault in Azure, what's going to end up happening here is it's going to say that this could take up to 15 to 30 minutes. It actually did take about 13 minutes. So what I did here is I closed that down, and then I went back and I refreshed here, and then all of a sudden it was there. So that whole process was about 13 minutes for that to go green. And then all I have to do is I have to choose my target that I want. Do I want to go into the classic mode or the ARM style of Azure? So classic was the original old Azure portal. This is the new Azure portal. I had some, I was playing around with like some XenApp in the cloud, so it had some storage accounts created and it had some virtual networks and stuff created because I was just setting this up as a quick demo. And then all I have to do is just finalize the settings here that I want. So I click OK, and then it wants me to configure my replication settings. So this would be like, for example, the policy for the frequency. So the same way that Clint had to set up a replication policy for Azure Backup, I also have to create a replication policy. This says, how long do I want to keep this? So I have to actually give this a name. How frequently do I want to replicate? And so the cool part about this is, from a capacity standpoint, you guys need to understand that when you take and you configure Azure Site Recovery, that you need to make sure you have enough egress bandwidth. And by egress bandwidth, I mean outbound. And so if you don't have enough outbound bandwidth, you're not going to be able to keep up with your policies. So you're asking yourself, how the heck am I going to take and know exactly how much bandwidth is going to be required to ship all of my data up to Azure as my DR site? And the good news is Microsoft has actually built a capacity planning spreadsheet. So when you're going through and you're configuring this inside of your environment, what you're going to see is you're going to see a capacity planning spreadsheet. So I'll click OK here. This is going to take and complete the process. You can see the little bell icon at the top that shows you all of your kind of jobs in flight. We just have to wait for this to quickly finish up. Once that finishes up, then I'll be able to actually select that policy, and I'll be able to move on to step number 5. And so inside of step number 5 here, this is where we're going to go through our capacity planning exercise. This, guys, is where you can download that spreadsheet that I was just talking about. So you click on the download button for the spreadsheet. You go ahead and you open up. It actually has a detailed view, or it has a quick planner view where you can actually punch in exactly what it is that you want to do. Because like I said, you really need to plan for that egress bandwidth that's going to be going outbound to the cloud. So if you don't do that, that's where I found that, you know, customers are going to get themselves into trouble working with this type of configuration. The actual infrastructure itself works very well, but you know, your pipe may not be big enough. So I say yes, and it actually prompts you, say, yeah, have you read this? Yeah, of course, I've gone through and I've read it. So now what we're going to do is we'll go through and we'll choose to replicate our infrastructure here, and I can choose my source site, I can choose my source target. It'll know now that I have this particular servers inside of here. Select the storage account. Where do you want this to actually go? So I already have a storage account in here, so I'll just select one of my existing storage accounts. And now what we'll do is have to choose a network, and inside of that template there was a network that was in there. And I'll just choose to configure my network. You can just select down below the actual Azure network. There's a little button to take you over there, and you can choose your Azure network. So I'll have an Azure network and a subnet and everything defined. And this is the subnet range that everything's going to run on in Azure. Okay. Choose my virtual network, and we are good to go. All right. Click OK. And now you get a view inside of that Hyper-V host. So these are all of the VMs that I've got on that Hyper-V host, guys. So on that Hyper-V host server, now I can simply just choose which ones I want to protect. I had a domain controller that I was looking to protect. It was TCHQ DC10. I'm going to go ahead and choose to protect that one, because now this was the registration between the Hyper-V host server and our Azure Site Recovery portal. I choose that particular box. You can choose multiples in there if you want. Configure the properties, and these are basically the actual VHDs that you want and what you're going to be doing, choose a type, and I can choose the actual disks that I want to protect in here. There was only one OS disk. All right, and then I just go ahead and click OK, and I go ahead and click Next, and I give this time some a little bit of time to sync up, and you know we are good to go. So what I'm going to do here, so I'm going to fast forward this here a little bit. This is the beauty of actually having this in a little bit of a demo. Then I can see that we've enabled replication here. See, my target says Azure. And then we can see that it has a percentage synchronized inside the portal. And then once that's done, I have the ability to take and check things. So this was me actually just watching the traffic going outbound up to the cloud. So I can see that the blob storage is being targeted at Microsoft. That would be one of the URLs that you would have to take and obviously protect. All right, so like in one of the future sessions, guys, we can actually continue this setup. I can maybe actually replicate some data out of our lab here. I can take this subscription hot and live, and now I'd actually be able to walk through the failover and failback process here. All right. Did I type my host name in wrong? Probably did. It's okay, it all still worked. Don't worry, guys. All right, so guys, when I take and we'll be having another session here this afternoon, I do unfortunately have a hard stop. I've got another meeting that I have to jump onto. I'll be available for a few minutes to answer your calls. So if you guys want to jump on the line here, I'm more than happy to take and answer your calls. I'm going to stop the recording. But once again, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully this was a valuable session and everybody was able to learn a few new things. I see, Carl, you had a question. A few others had a few questions. All right. All right, let's stop this. Okay, guys, thank you so much.